Shohei Ohtani. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, September 20th. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Shohei Ohtani. I don't really know what to say here. Shohei Ohtani.
Thanks for stopping by. I hope you guys enjoyed the podcast today, but that's first pitch. I mean, that's literally, I mean, how else can you say anything else? I mean, this guy has us speechless.
Yeah. So in case you were under a rock or something, Shohei Ohtani goes into yesterday's game with 48 stolen bases and 48 home runs facing the Miami Marlins. He gets up in the, I'm just going to go through the box score in chronological order. He gets up in the first inning. He leads off, obviously, double, steals third. He's now at 49. He gets up again in the second inning. They're up only, I think it's only 1-0 when he comes up. He hits an RBI single, steals second, 50th stolen base right there in the first two innings. You turn around, he gets up again in the third inning. It's a 2 RBI double. It's now 5-1. Okay. He goes around. He does not bat in the fourth. The bum, right? He doesn't get back up until the sixth inning. In the sixth inning, Shohei Ohtani hits a 2-run home run. It's now 9-3. That is his 49th home run. He's not done. Shohei Ohtani gets back up in the seventh inning, and he does this.
1-2, Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way, back it goes! Gone! One-of-a-kind player! One-of-a-kind season! Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club!
Has Lone Depot Park ever been louder?
The WBC. I think.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, the WBC. So 50-50, there you go. You're good. And then not to be outdone, I'm sorry, technically 50-51. He did steal another base in there. So then to not be outdone in a 14-3 game, the Miami Marlins put in a position player, Vidal Brujan, into pitch. And Shohei Ohtani, thanks to a 2-out Chris Taylor single, Shohei Ohtani gets another at-bat in the ninth and does this.
Watching this guy.
Oh my gosh! Shohei Ohtani! The greatest day in baseball history!
I mean, I feel bad for Brujan. Did that thing ever land? Has that landed yet?
I actually believe it is now in orbit. And you heard Joe Davis there, historic day. This genuinely was one of the greatest offensive days in MLB history. So 6-for-6, 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 2 stolen bases. So he finished with 10 RBI. 17 total bases. And there's a lot of things about this that were incredibly unique, right? He was the first player since 1901 to have 5 hits, multiple homers, and multiple stolen bases, okay? He was the first player with at least 5 extra base hits and more than 1 stolen base in the same game. And then obviously, he did all of this to hit 50-50 and to clinch the Dodgers into the postseason. Only one MLB player has had any game in a career with individually 10 RBIs, 6 hits, 5 extra base hits, 3 home runs, and 2 stolen bases. That is, they have done all of those things individually in a game in their season. He did that in the same game.
This guy is insane, Lindsey. I mean, he is absolutely insane. Somebody asked us, I think it was Troy, our other co-host on the show, brought it up yesterday. We were sitting in the chat, and he said, if Shohei Ohtani retired today, would he be a Hall of Famer? And I don't think that there is an answer. I don't think you can say no. I think he would be a shoo-in if he retired today. I know it's a tough question to ask, but what else does he have to prove? He's the first player in MLB history to do a 50-50 season. He's been a two-way player, a two-time MVP. The only thing he hasn't
done yet is a three-time MVP.
Right. And the only thing he hasn't done yet is do something in the World Series and win a World Series, but he hasn't had a chance to go to the playoffs. We're going to see that this season. So he might knock that off his checklist this year. So yeah, I do think he's a Hall of Famer as of right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot of, I think that you would get a little bit of pushback if he just like announced he was retiring after this season, right? If he voluntarily stepped away from the game, I think you would get some people who would argue that his peak was arguably higher than we've ever seen, that it was too short for him to be a Hall of Famer. I do think he would get in. I don't think it'd be unanimous. I don't even know if it'd be first ballot. It'd be probably the greatest Hall of Fame debate we've had in a long time. I think if something, God forbid, tragic happened to him, I think it'd be a shoo-in. He'd be a first ballot Hall of Famer when he was first eligible. But not a concern because he signed for another 9 seasons after this. And so we're going to have plenty of opportunity to see Shohei Ohtani play baseball. There was a really interesting, you pointed this out to me, there was a really interesting article from MLB.com asking about, is there anybody else in baseball who could join this 50-50 club? Because the record for stolen bases in a 50 home run season is like in the 20s, right? And no player had gotten to the level of 50-50, obviously. The most you had seen was Ronald had 41 and 78 last year, or guys would have 44 homers and 41 stolen bases, things like that. And so the article said, is there who could join the 50-50 list? I think the best bet of current players in MLB right now feels like it's Bobby Witt Jr. because he is one of the best hitters in the game. He's one of the fastest players in the game right now. He just posted only the 9th. I think it's the, or it's, no, it's the, what is it? It's the, yeah, it's like the 9th ever back-to-back 30-30 season. And he's only 24 years old. And so you have a little bit more time for him to push to do something like that. I think Bobby Witt is one of the few that would be capable of that. I do think the homers are the harder part of that for him, but I do think he could do it.
Yeah, I think Bobby Witt would probably be the right answer, but I think there's another one on that list that it surprised me. And the argument for him actually was pretty valid enough that I actually went and went a little deeper in the argument over on Sports Illustrated with a piece that's going to come out later on today. But Gunnar Henderson for the Baltimore Orioles. Now, he's having a great season this year. He currently leads all shortstops with 37 home runs, and he has 20 stolen bases. So if he gets 3 more home runs, he's only going to join only Alex Rodriguez and Fernando Tatis Jr. as the only shortstops in MLB history to record a 40-20 season. So that sounds really fun, right? But if you look at last year, Shohei Ohtani, now I know he was a pitcher as well, so keeping that in mind, I'm not comparing Henderson to Ohtani, but if you just look at the numbers from 2023 Ohtani to what Henderson's doing this year, Ohtani had 44 home runs and 20 stolen bases. That's pretty close to what Henderson's doing right now. So if you put some maybe possibilities with trajectories, it shows that Henderson's on his way to being close to that. I'm not saying that Henderson's going to be the next 50-50 guy by any means. Right. I don't think we're going to see that for a long time. Personally, I think that we will eventually get one. The baseball always seems to have like that, but I don't think it's going to happen for quite some time. But Henderson's, I think, an interesting argument, Lindsay.
If you're the Orioles, do you consider, you look at how Ohtani, because he wasn't pitching, he was able to run more and get 50-50. Do you say, hey, Gunner, we're going to, instead of playing you at shortstop every day, we're going to play you at shortstop 4 days a week or 3 days a week. We're going to third base you twice and we're going to DH you twice a week so that you have a little more opportunity to run, knowing, thinking that, hey, if he can give us an extra 30 stolen bases, that's more valuable than the defense if we're putting in a comparable defender at shortstop? Do you think that's something that you see the Orioles ever decide to try to do? Or is that just they're going to put the guy at shortstop and let him play shortstop?
If any of the teams are going to do it, one of those teams would be the Baltimore Orioles. Based on the way that they look at data and handle data, Mike Elias is one of those guys, and he brings in data guys that make decisions like that, are not afraid to make those decisions, I should say. So I don't think that that's out of the question, especially, right. I mean, you could even start as soon as next year, Lindsay. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen to guys like Anthony Santander, and that might push opening spots to the designated hitter role. That might be able to bring a guy like Gunnar Henderson to sit as DH, have him some, give him some days off in the infield, because that infield's loaded. They have plenty of prospect talent that's sitting in the wings that can come up and play some spots there. So, I mean, I wouldn't rule that out of question.
Yeah. The rest of that list, by the way, if you guys were curious, Ellie De La Cruz of the Reds, Ronald Acuna Jr. of the Braves, obviously, you know, he had a 40-70 year last year. Fernando Tatis Jr., if he were to be fully healthy, he's top of the league in power and speed. It's just one of those, he just seems to miss games every single season. Julio Rodriguez, he was 28-25 his rookie year, and then 32-37 his sophomore year. He's struggled this year, but Gunner, and then Jackson Churio of the Brewers, because he went 2020 as a 20-year-old in his first season in baseball. And so with a full season and acclimated to the majors, they think he could do better than that, which makes total sense. So I get it.
Yeah. And we probably should just give a little nod to Ronald Acuna Jr. here. He did that 40-70 season after his 2021 injury. Who knows what next year is going to bring up when he had an injury this year. So it's quite possible. So I think the guy that should be probably mentioned, and we didn't, is Acuna, because he's the one that's been the closest other than Ohtani.
Yeah. One of the big winners on Thursday, and a team that didn't even play, is the Detroit Tigers. The Minnesota Twins dropped their game to the Cleveland Guardians 3-2 in 10 innings, meaning that the Tigers are now tied for the final wildcard spot in the American League. Now, again, the Twins have a lot of these tiebreakers. We have to remind people of that. Shout out to Kyle in our Discord for pointing that out. But at this point, does it feel like, it still feels like Detroit is going to get in over Minnesota, doesn't it?
Yeah, the vibes are high. I mean, they are hyping right now, those Tigers. They look really good. Pitching is solid. Their young core is solid. They just, right now, they look like a postseason team. And Minnesota's struggling. I think that we're going to see it's going to be really impactful this weekend. There's two really good series between those two teams. The Tigers travel to Baltimore to take on the Orioles, who look like they're coming out of their slump. So if the Tigers can figure that out this weekend, that's huge. And then the Twins are going against the Red Sox, who were at one point in the postseason race. They have fell out, but there's no walk in the park either. But that's a nice spot for their offense to wake up. Fenway's one of those nice spots for extra base hits. So the Twins could resurge and the Tigers could fall. This could be a very pivotal weekend. I mean, regardless, it's going to be, because we only have, 9 games left? So it's going to be a really interesting weekend in baseball.
Big concern for me when it comes to the pitching for the Twins. 4.64 ERA, 23rd worst in the last 30 days. And it just feels like when you have so many prospects or, you know, young first-year pitchers in your rotation, Simeon Woods Richardson and guys like that, David Festa, that you can't necessarily afford to have them stumble. And it's caused the bullpen to be a bit overtaxed. So I think that's my big concern there when it comes to the Twins. And it feels like the Tigers are going to do it. Yeah. Okay. So kind of another team that is officially out of it now. The San Francisco Giants dropped their matchup to the Baltimore Orioles 5-3. The Giants are officially eliminated from the postseason. What am I supposed to think about the San Francisco Giants? Because they won over 100 games just a few seasons ago, and now they're out of the postseason. They've been out of the postseason every year since then. Was that a fluke, or is this something where this team is still fixable if they can just get some good breaks on the health perspective? Because, yes, they were in first place with 107 wins in 21. But after that, the last time that they won the division was 2012.
Yeah, and then I think their last postseason appearance before that 2021 was 2016, right? So you take that 2021 out of it, and you haven't been to the postseason in almost 10 years. Now, when you were back, when you were in there, you were winning the World Series every other year. I mean, you had a little bit of a dynasty on your hands.
10, 12, 14. Yeah. Three straight.
Right. It was every other year. 5 years. You might as well bet on the Giants. But you're right. There's a big question mark of what's going on with this Giants team. I do think that 107, you kind of have to call a little bit of fluke because they fell. They got a little bit of luck. They won close games. They got a lot of support from a guy like Chris Bryant, who we haven't seen do since, you know? So, I mean, I don't know if fluke's the right word, but I can't think of a better one right now. This is an interesting team. You go ahead and you get some veteran players that should be superstars at their level. And for the most part, they are. Blake Snell's been fantastic. Matt Chapman's been great. So good that Matt Chapman, that you went and go ahead and signed him to an extension this before the offseason hits, to an extension that he probably wouldn't have got as much money if he would have tested the free agent market against everyone else. I think he got his highest threshold of what he would have got paid for staying with San Francisco. And I think that comes down to them being afraid, them being a little gun shy of knowing that they might miss out on some top free agents once again, like they did with the Aaron Judge and the Carlos Correa incidents just a few years ago.
Bryce Harper, Shohei Ohtani
too, right?
Yeah.
So where I'm seeing this is they're spinning their wheels, Lindsay. I don't think they have a pure direction of where they need to go. They have some interesting prospects that could fill some voids, but they're in the toughest division in baseball right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than the Colorado Rockies, every single one of those teams could easily be a postseason team, and the Giants included. They have the skill to do it, but they're missing a certain amount of pieces. I'm not sure exactly where those pieces need to be filled in. I don't know if they just need one more big star to call it, but they haven't really signed a big star if you don't want to count Snell and Chapman into that. And I don't think you should, but really since Barry Bonds in the mid 90s.
Yeah. I, the reason I have some optimism for next season, which I have not had before, is you have to feel like it's possible they have fixed two of the most important positions on the field. Hiliot Ramos having the breakout at center field. Was an all-star this year, batted 266. I know he slowed down in the second half, but getting him in center field, you'll get Young-Hoo Lee back next year. I think it was a shoulder injury earlier in the year. And then Tyler Fitzgerald's emergence at shortstop. It's 87 games, but he's batting 293 with an 861 OPS, 14 homers, 17 stolen bases. So he would have been on track for a 25-25 season from short. And I feel like shortstop specifically has been a real struggle ever since they decided to move on from Brandon Crawford. And so, like, you saw they tried Casey Schmidt there. They tried Marco Luciano there. Couldn't really figure it out. Nick Ahmed's played some for them. I mean, they've Thairo Estrada's played some there for them. I think finding guys for those positions has been pretty helpful, because now going into next year, you've got two outfielders that you trust in Lee and Ramos. You've got a left side of the infield that you trust in Chapman and Fitzgerald. It's going to come down to your pitching, right? You'll have Logan Webb. You'll have Jordan Hicks. What happens with Blake Snell? Does he opt out? I assume that he's going to opt out. Can you bring him back? They have not had any conversations on an extension as of now. They have not discussed extending him like they did Chapman, which is kind of surprising to me. And it's if you lose him, how comfortable are you with Logan Webb, Jordan Hicks, Kyle Harrison being your 1-3? I forgot about Robbie Ray. So how comfortable are you with that being your rotation? Is that enough for you? I don't know. But I do feel like figuring out shortstop and center field is a better position than they've been in the last couple seasons. But to your point, they haven't really been able to add in free agency. I know Chapman is supposedly already reaching out to players that he knows, trying to set the table for this winter and them being aggressive in free agency. But you have to wonder, can they figure out power production, especially from a corner outfield spot? I feel like if you have Ramos and Lee, you're not getting amazing power production like you could. Ramos has, I think it's 21 home runs. It's not bad, right? But Lee's not a power hitter. He hit two in his 37 games in the majors. He's a prototypical center fielder. So some offensive questions there, but at the same time, you've got some things to build off of, and I feel like you haven't had things to build off of in a while.
If you would have asked that question at the All-Star break about Blake Snell and his contract, I feel like you'd be like, oh, no worries. He's going to accept his player option. And then you might actually be concerned because he's going to accept his player option.
Right.
Because he was just not doing good at the beginning of the year. Now, flip side, as we all should have, you know, expected, because he's been a second half pitcher for the last like three or four seasons, Lindsay, he has stepped up. He's had some pretty insane numbers, not Cy Young material like he was last year, but still pretty insane. And now he's probably going to get paid more in the offseason than he was planning on. I didn't think that he would opt out because of that contract's pretty good. It's a pretty nice option.
Yeah.
But looking at it now, maybe Boris did cook. Maybe he did.
When he came back to the majors for his start on July 9th against the Toronto Blue Jays, he's made 13 starts since July 9th. He is 4-0 with a 1.33 ERA, and he struck out 105 batters in 74 and a third innings. The team is 11-2 in his 13 starts, including, and one of those was a complete game shutout of the Cincinnati Reds in Cincinnati, in Great American Ballpark. So always kind of noteworthy there. Complete game, no hitter, 3 walks, 11 strikeouts there for Blake Snell. So yeah, it feels like it makes sense. Max Fried's got to be punching air right now that Blake Snell's going to opt out, because I feel like Snell would take over as the top lefty pitching option in free agency, and Fried would kick down as to the number 2 lefty and the number 3 pitcher available behind Corbin Burns and Blake Snell. And just bad timing for Max Fried.
No, I agree. Yeah. I think that's especially he's not had the best season for the Braves either. He's had a good season, but it's not the one that he was looking for heading into free agency.
Exactly. Speaking of the Braves, hop it into quick pitch real quick. The Braves took down the Cincinnati Reds 15-3 yesterday. And this was absolutely an absurd game. 18 hits, just completely destroyed Reds pitching. They set an MLB record for 3-run homers in this game. Are the Atlanta Braves back? Is this something where they are still 2 games back in the wild card? We'll get to what Arizona did in a second. But is this enough to make you feel like Atlanta has the offense to compete in the final 2 weeks of the season? Or is this, you're in Cincinnati and that it's Great American Small Park for a reason?
I think that this was some of that offense that they ordered in May, and it finally came in on back order. I think that's exactly what happened here. But I do think that they can compete. I think this team is definitely, I think we've said that all year long. This team has talent, even with the injury concerns. It just wasn't producing at the levels it should have been. So yes, I think the Braves can compete. They're going to need a little bit of help from the guys ahead of them, between the Diamondbacks and the Mets, because they're also doing well. But yes, they can sneak into the postseason. If they do, they're going to be a dangerous team. I think we all know that.
Yeah, some interesting takeaways from this. Matt Olson tied Pete Rose with his 477th consecutive game started at first base, while Chris Sale set a major league record with his 18th consecutive start of 2 or fewer earned runs. That record, he was tied with Walter Johnson in 1919 and King Felix Hernandez in 2014.
Matt Olson, about the final Iron Man?
Matt Olson, the final Iron Man. There was a story in The Athletic about that just this week, about how you see less of that than you used to because of workload management, platooning, and things like that. But talking about that wild card race, the Mets took down the Phillies 10-6. Taijuan Walker, as he has so often this season, took the loss. He is now 3-7 with a 6.91 ERA. He allowed 8 runs on 6 hits and 3 walks in 3 1/3 innings. Luis Severino, quality start for the Mets. 6 innings, 5 hits, 3 runs, struck out 7. At the same time, the Diamondbacks took advantage of a Brewers team that was obviously playing like they clinched the division the day before. The Diamondbacks win 5-1. And I want to tell you how I know that this was an issue with the Milwaukee Brewers. So This is the second consecutive start for Brandon Pfaadt against the Brewers. Last night, 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 run, no walks to 12 strikeouts. When he faced them on the 14th, he went 1 2/3 innings with 8 runs allowed on 7 hits and 3 walks with no strikeouts in a 15-8 loss. This was obviously the Brewers just clinched. This was a hangover lineup, and it did not work out for Milwaukee or for Atlanta, because now they, despite the victory, are still 2 games back in the wild card.
Yeah, you should never bet on a hangover team, and at least if you do, bet against them, because it shows right there. You know, you just made it perfectly known. Willie Adames finally sat. I think that was his one of his only first games he sat all season long.
First.
And it finally happened once they clinched the postseason. Again, I still am so shocked about how his season has gone this year. At the beginning of the year, I thought he was easily going to be a Los Angeles Dodger. There's no way that he was going to stay with the Milwaukee Brewers because his team wasn't going to be competitive. And they go ahead and happen to be the first National League team to clinch the postseason. They absolutely made a liar out of me. And there should be no concern about that loss yesterday against the Diamondbacks about this team moving forward. Yet they were just probably needing a little bit of aspirin and maybe a red Gatorade to help them get through the day.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of wrapping up with the AL East here. We mentioned the Orioles taking down the Giants 5-3. Anthony Santander was the reason that they got that win. Zach Eflin had a solid start in that game. But there's been some other interesting news out of here. The Yankees dropped to the Mariners 3-2. And a little bit of a scare for Juan Soto, coming down hard and trying to make a play on a ball. He says he's going to play. I think the wording that he used was he's getting x-rays. It's a precaution, but he said he banged his knee on the concrete. So a little bit to watch for there. You feel like he's going to be okay. He was diagnosed with a contusion, said his knee quote, feels pretty good, not bad at all, but they're still going to give him x-rays today just to be safe. We'll see what happens there. And then at the same time, the Toronto Blue Jays have officially lost Bo Bichette for the rest of the season. He has a broken finger. He's not going to make it back before the season ends. Do you see both Soto and Bichette on these teams next year?
Ooh, good question. I am going to go out on the limb, and I think that Juan Soto is going to get paid big, but I don't think it's going to be at the Yankees, so I think that he will go elsewhere. And I know that's a tough one for Yankees fans, and you know we're probably going to get a lot of bad comments for that one, and I'm okay with that. So I will say that no, both players will not be with their respected teams. Juan Soto will not be a Yankee, but I do think Bo Bichette will stay with the Toronto Blue Jays at least at the beginning of the year, and see if they can figure it out. Maybe extensions in the plans for Vlad Guerrero Jr. and then maybe Bichette later. But if not, they can make a move and move on him at the trade deadline next season. But starting the beginning of the year, Bo Bichette will be a Blue Jay.
There we go. So you say Juan Soto leaves, Bo Bichette stays. I think the Yankees are going to try to fight the Mets off for Soto. Just feels like they've seen this year that offense is not going to be the same without Juan Soto, and they've got to have him in there. I think they move heaven and earth to try to make it happen, even if it involves spending way more money than they want to. Now, do I think it's a great move for roster construction? Probably not. I feel like they're going to be a little bit hampered with 2 massive salaries. But at the same time, I feel like that's the move they're going to make. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a fun offseason for that.
When you look at Soto's injury, they're 89-64. They're tied with Cleveland for the most part for the top team in the American League. But other than that, Houston's at 83 wins. So they kind of have, it looks like they already had the AL East in the bag. Looks like they actually have a bye in the bag as well. Mm-hmm. Does that make you a little bit more safe with Juan Soto for the rest of the regular season?
I think I probably rest him today. I mean, I don't think you necessarily need Juan Soto in Oakland playing in the Coliseum to try to beat the A's. I'm not saying you bench him the whole weekend. I'm not saying you don't take him on the trip, but I don't think you really need to push that hard to get Juan Soto back in the lineup today to take down the Oakland A's, since you've already, like you said, you've already clinched, you already have a postseason spot, you already have a bye pretty much locked in unless you lose out from here on out. I think you take it easy with him. You give him a day or two off. Honestly, I wouldn't hate if you gave Judge a day or two off too. You know, let Judge DH a little bit, have Dominguez and Grisham and Verdugo or something like that as your outfield for a day or two. just to kind of give some guys some time off and give them some rest before the postseason gets here.
I'm with you.
Yep. This has been First Pitch for Friday, September 20th. Enjoy the games this weekend. We will see you on Monday for First Pitch.